Through. We're in Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 13. It says, "You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." Okay, so in these four verses, Jesus says that his followers, because that's who he's speaking to, his disciples, should function as salt and light. That they should live as if they are salt and light. That's the illustration that he uses for us to understand what our lives should look like. The problem is that for you and I, we probably misunderstand how important salt and light is, because salt and light in 2023 compared to salt and light back in the days of Jesus are not quite as important. We take it for granted, right? If you want salt, you just go and eat anywhere. Pretty much any food that you eat is going to have salt. If anything, now people have too much salt. It's not like a problem where we don't have enough salt. No, we could probably do with cutting out some salt. And if we want light, we just go and we flip a switch and we have as much light as we could want. Okay, but that wasn't the situation when Jesus was saying these words. That is not how it was at that time. At that time, salt and light were of great importance. They were entirely necessary for life to be able to function. Okay, it gets dark, they have things to do, and it's pitch black without light. And salt was so important that entire economies, instead of using coins, instead of using money, they would actually use salt. Okay, that's how important and rare and valuable salt was at that time. So if we don't understand that, we might misunderstand the responsibility that Jesus gives us here. We might kind of misunderstand what it is that he's saying, because we don't understand how important these things are, because we have such easy access to them. But that hasn't always been the case. Throughout history, salt has been highly valued. Even back in Leviticus chapter 2, which is at the very beginning of the Bible, God is just explaining the laws, the rules for how he wants his people to live. And he says that the sacrifices that you give me have to have salt. Okay, they were to burn their sacrifices to God. And God said all those sacrifices need to include salt, because salt was valuable. That showed real sacrifice. Okay, so God says that in Leviticus 2. Have you ever heard the phrase, "worth his salt"? Like, that person is worth their salt. Have you ever heard that? It's kind of a American phrase, and it's not only is it an American phrase, but it's like an old American phrase. I mean, I don't know if I've ever heard anyone really say it, but I know it's a phrase. And the reason why that had become a phrase is because way back when Jesus was saying these words, and then a little bit before, the Roman soldiers, they were actually paid in salt. Okay, so being worth their salt is like, oh, you're worth how much I paid you in salt. They're worth their salt. There's been wars fought over salt. Like, countries have gone to war against other countries for control of salt. Which, this is not relevant to our Bible study at all, but it's kind of crazy because, you know, if you want salt, you just like go to the ocean and boil the water. But they didn't understand that at the time. Okay? And it's a little more complicated than that. A little more complicated than that, but still, it's kind of crazy. But we know that salt was important back then. Life and death were decided, right? Wars happened. People were killed over salt. And people have died because they didn't have salt. Salt was used to preserve food. Okay, and if people were traveling and they couldn't preserve their food, they could starve to death. Biologically, salt is important. Again, we all probably get too much salt, but if you don't have enough salt, it can lead to cramps, which then can lead to nausea, vomiting, dizziness. And if it gets bad enough, a lack of salt actually can lead to coma and death. Okay, so don't feel so bad next time you're eating some good salty food. Okay, all that to say, salt is important. Okay, salt is important. The presence of salt in this world is still important and was understood to be critically important when Jesus was saying these words. And he says, Christians are like salt. Okay, Christians are necessary. They're important in the world. They're critical. The world needs you. So last week, at the end of what we were looking at in Matthew 5, verses maybe 4 through 9, I think we got to, maybe no, 11. We saw that the world persecutes and criticizes Christians. Okay, so the world can persecute, criticize Christians. And it's crazy because this week we see that, and they actually need us. They actually need us. We're to be the salt of the world. But what does that mean? Okay, it's one of those verses. It's like, oh, we're supposed to be the salt of the world. And then you're left with no clue. Like, what does that actually mean for us? So, to understand what this really means for us to be the salt of the world, we need to know a little bit of the nature of how salt was used, how it's beneficial, so we know how Christians are to be beneficial to the world. Several Bible authors on this topic say that there's over 1,400 uses for salt. I have no idea how that could be true, unless they're talking like all of the different foods you put it on, but then it'd be way more, so that must not be what they're saying. I don't know if I believe it, but I do believe that it has a lot of uses, okay? A lot of uses, and some of those uses, you can clearly see how it also kind of is similar to the way that the Christian is to interact with the world. So we're going to look at three uses of salt for us and how those are similar to the nature of Christians. Okay, so number one, and probably the thing that Jesus was most clearly referencing, is salt was used as a preservative. Okay, again, I already mentioned it, but if you at that time wanted to keep food good, be able to travel with it, keep it for a longer period of time, was preserved basically by just adding a whole bunch of salt. A whole bunch of salt. And that's where we see a lot of the dried foods that still exist today that we still eat. And the salty dried foods, because it was good for traveling. It was good to preserve. You know, they didn't have refrigerators back then. They didn't have the canning process. Couldn't go to the supermarket and buy a can of Spam. You had to get meat and add in your own salt. So it was a preservative. It's one of the earliest preservatives, and that was what made it so valuable. Okay, that's what made it so valuable. Because food, particularly meat, without salt, was prone to decay and rot. Right? You ever smell food that's rotten? Yeah, rotten meat? Terrible. It's terrible. It's gross. You don't want anything to do with it. Okay, so in telling us that Christians are to be the salt of the earth, that Christians are to function in a way as a preservative for the world, Jesus is saying that the world, the culture around us, is also prone to rotting and decay. Rotting, decay, and death. Okay, in the Bible it actually says that apart from God, we're dead, right? We're just dead. And dead, that smells rot, decay, gross. And Christians are to function as a preservative. Way back in Genesis chapter 3, that's where we see sin enter into the world. Okay, the world was perfect. There was no death. There was no decay. There was no rot in our culture. But then sin entered the world, and at that point, the world broke. Okay, you hear that we live in a broken world. that's due to sin. And now the world is full of just rotting decay. Rotting decay. People bring up the second law of thermodynamics, that the world is getting more and more chaotic, right? It's just getting worse and worse. And Christians are supposed to come in and stop that. We're supposed to preserve the world. Okay, God tells us here that if there is hope for a rotten world, if there is hope for this world that is dead, dying, if there's any chance to slow that decay, to prevent it, the responsibility is the Christians. We're supposed to live in such a way that we bring life. That we bring life. Okay, so we're to be the salt of the world in a decaying world all around us. So we're called to actually be part of the world and help serve and prevent corruption. Okay, this happens in the way that you talk. The way that you talk. This happens in the way that you live. Have you ever noticed that there's certain people, when you're around them, everyone's kind of attitude just gets worse and worse and worse. They have a negative influence. Next thing you know, the type of topics you're discussing, they're not holy and they're not right, but instead they're kind of sinful, rotten, and wrong. And then there's other people that when you're around them, they have kind of a cleansing effect, right? You don't feel comfortable talking that way. You don't feel comfortable treating sin lightly, celebrating sin. But instead, it's kind of prevented by the presence of those Christians. Okay? So, we should live in a way that actually impacts the people around us, in a way that brings life into a dead and dying world. I don't know if we're doing it. Okay? I have no idea if you're actually doing it. But Jesus says you're supposed to. Okay, number two. Next most common use for salt, and what many of us use it for today, is seasoning, right? You eat food, it doesn't taste very good, it's kind of bland, it's kind of gross, so you add salt to it. Okay, we like the taste of salt. Probably one of the most common uses for it today. Put on food in order to enhance the flavor, right? You want it to be better, so you add some salt. Now, the world probably wouldn't admit it, and they might not recognize it, but people who are living a life apart from Jesus, people who are just living a life in their own will, with their own plans, with no concern of God, no attention to His Word, not in His plan for their life, their life is actually boring, it's average, it's just empty. Again, they might not recognize it, they might not admit it, but it's true. It's true. And that's because their life is missing. It's missing the thing that actually satisfies, which is Christ. Okay, have you ever ate something because you're hungry, but it just doesn't taste good at all? I mean, you make yourself eat it, but it really doesn't satisfy you. You're kind of left wishing you had something else. Okay. Peter's remembering a recent meal, I think. It's like, I don't really want this. What? Disappointing. Maybe it just needed more salt. Okay, but we know what that's like. Okay, you're having something that's like, this is just missing something, and fine, I'll eat it, but it's not what I want. It's not what it should be. And the reality is that is life apart from Jesus. Again, a lot of times we don't recognize it. I didn't know that. When I was living apart from God, I didn't realize that my life was boring, empty, unsatisfying, because I had never actually tasted the real thing. The example I have for this is back home. We would eat bananas and pineapple, and I was satisfied with them. They were good enough. But then we came to the Philippines and we ate bananas and pineapple and found out, oh, bananas and pineapple are actually supposed to taste way better. Okay? The bananas and pineapple in America are very disappointing once you know what the real thing is. And the same with life with Christ. Far more, you know, it's just a stupid example. But we don't even realize what we're missing out on. You don't realize how empty your life is. You don't realize how boring it is, how unsatisfying it is until you experience the real thing. Okay? So, we as a church believe that life with God should be an adventure. It should be exciting. Not easy, not comfortable. I'm not saying it should be good all the time. Okay? Even, you know, sometimes you have food and it's like, I don't ever want to eat it again, but it was an adventure. It had a lot of flavor. It was fun to try. It wasn't boring, at least. Okay, we believe that life with God should be an adventure. There's a way to do Christianity. It's dry, dull, and boring. Dry, dull, and boring. And I believe that the world is very familiar with that. That's what the world knows about Christianity. Just dry, dull, and boring. And then there's a way that's exciting, it's vibrant, brings tears to your eyes, it brings laughter, brings joy, it brings excitement, challenge, makes you want to laugh, cry, scream. And that is the version of Christianity that we believe God wants for us, not the dull, boring, and bland one. The sad reality is that a lot of us present Christianity as if it's dull and boring, and a lot of people then believe Christianity is boring. They don't want anything to do with Christianity because they think if I were to actually give my life to God, if I actually lived in His plan and in His will for my life, it would be boring, it would be miserable, I don't want anything to do with that. And I think a lot of us live that kind of Christianity. You know, we're content with just the mediocre. But God has more for us. Okay, the sad thing is that we're so easily content with something less. And it's been that way for a long time. This isn't just a current problem. This has been a problem for a long time. There was an emperor in the year 300. Okay, so this was like shortly after Jesus. This was still when parts of the Bible were being collected. So this was a long time ago. An emperor named Julian, Roman emperor. And he looked at the lives of Christians, and this is what he said. This is how he described them. He said, "Have you looked at these Christians closely? They're hollow-eyed, pale-cheeked, with no courage at all. They have no ambition. They waste their lives unaware of the greatness that's around them. They just reject everything and wait to die." Okay, so he looked at Christians and said, they have this miserable life, they have nothing to live for. That's how the Christians were living. And if I'm honest, I think that a lot of people would probably look at the church, look at Christians today and say kind of the same thing. Right? It was boring, dull, empty. It shouldn't be that way. Shouldn't be that way. So he looked at the Christians and said that instead of Christians being the salt of the world that brings flavor to a bland life, it's like they have actually sucked all the flavor out of life. Taken all the good, taken all the joy, taken all of the purpose, and have empty living. Okay, so if your Christianity is boring, if it's empty, if it's just religious duty, it doesn't get you excited, you're not passionate about it, it's lacking any kind of real depth, lacking anything that anyone else might actually want anything to do with, you're not being the salt of the world. We should be excited about this. Okay? There's one pastor that says we all need to rediscover the lost radiance of the Christian faith. The lost radiance. If you think about who God is, you think about who Jesus is, you think about what He's done, you think about how sinful and evil we are and the salvation that Jesus offers, this should be exciting. The purpose that He has for us, the mission that He has for us to live, it's exciting stuff, and yet we don't live that way. We're supposed to be the salt. We're supposed to bring the excitement, bring the joy, bring the life that's actually satisfying and worth living. Okay, third purpose. And this one is kind of closely connected to the last one. Salt makes you thirsty. Right? It's thirst-inducing. you have a lot of salt and you end up thirsty. Have you ever had a really salty meal and then you go to bed and you wake up in the middle of the night and it's like, I'm so thirsty. I don't have any water anywhere near me, but I have to get up and get something to drink. I just have to. Okay, salt makes you thirsty. The whole world knows that. Just basic stuff. Okay, so I'm saying Christians should make the world thirsty. And I'd be like, well, what does that have to do with anything? Well, if you remember last week in, I don't remember what verse, I could look. Verse 6, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. So what should Christians make the world thirsty for? Righteousness. Righteousness. And where is righteousness found? Only in Jesus. The only place that righteousness is found is in Christ. So Christians should make the world thirsty for Jesus. Okay, we should make the world crave Jesus, want Jesus, desire Jesus, actually be near Jesus. We should make people actually want to know about Jesus. Do you know that the Bible says that the world should look at how Christians live and they should be almost envious, jealous of your life because you know God? Okay, not because you have all the wonderful stuff, not because your life is easy, but because you know God. There's a verse that says you should be living in such a way that you have this hope, this real hope and joy that the world doesn't know anything about, and they come and they say, why do you have that hope? I don't know what that is. I need that. That's how we should be living. And a lot of us know nothing about that either. We don't live that way. We're not being the salt of the world. One way to think about this is to think about, how is it that you talk about God? You know, do you talk about God as if he's just this boring obligation and duty? Or are you excited about him? How do you talk about church? Do you talk about, oh, I have to go to church? Got to go to church now? Or do you say, like, I get to go to church. I get to hear more about the Bible. I get to spend time with God's people. Okay, what's your attitude? Do you ever actually tell anyone about God? Because you're never going to make anyone hunger for the knowledge of Jesus if you never tell anyone about Jesus. You just won't. Okay? So do you ever talk about God? If you're a Christian, does anyone know that you're a Christian? Are you making people hungry for God? 2 Corinthians 5:11 says that we should live as if we are compelled to persuade people about the reality of God. We want to be persuasive because God's worth it. Are we? Are we really? If not, why? Okay, if this isn't us, why isn't us? Do we actually know God? Because if we know God, we should be excited about God. There was a Christian, okay, it was quite a while ago, but there was a Christian who was considering entering into be like a pastor, entering into ministry and missions work. Okay, so there was this guy, and he's like, you know, I'm kind of thinking I should become a pastor, but he chooses not to, and then he says this quote, which I thought was, I don't know, funny and also very condemning and kind of makes you have some self-examination at the same time. He says, you know, I might have actually entered into the ministry. I might have actually entered into serving the Lord if certain clergymen or certain pastors, ministers, church leaders I knew hadn't acted like and looked so much like undertakers. Okay, undertakers, those are the people that go and bury people. It's like, you know, I looked at the ways that the church leaders were living, I looked at the ways that the pastors were living, and I didn't see joy and excitement. I saw people who hated their job. I saw people who wanted nothing to do with the God that they were supposedly proclaiming. I'd like to be someone who, when they see how I live, when they hear how I talk, they want to say, I need to know the God that he knows. Okay, I would like to be the kind of person where when they hear me talk, they see the way that I live, they say, I want to know God like he knows God. There's people in my life that are like that. My pastor makes me excited to know God more. I'd like to be that kind of person. You know, and I know that sometimes I'm not. And if I'm honest, I just know that there's times where I don't make people excited about God. I don't make them passionate about God. I make them apathetic towards God. I don't want that to be the case. I want people to be excited about God. And, that doesn't come from like fake emotion. Like I could start screaming right now as I'm talking, and that's not what I'm talking about. That's not necessarily real. There's a lot of Christians, a lot of church leaders that try and do that. They have this fake excitement and emotion, thinking that that's leading or showing a passion for God when it very well might not be. But I want to be someone that gets people excited about God. Salt makes people thirsty. We're to be the salt of the world. And part of that is to get people to crave more of God. So God says, be the salt of the world. Something to know about salt here. Do you know that salt is really useless if it just kind of stays in the salt shaker? Right? Salt accomplishes nothing when it just stays in its container. It doesn't preserve anything if it doesn't come into contact with what it's supposed to preserve. It doesn't actually give flavor if it doesn't come out of the salt shaker. You can cook the best meal you want, and if you set the salt right next to your food, it doesn't help. You actually have to put it onto the food. Okay? If you don't actually have any salt, it's not going to make you thirsty. Like, looking at salt doesn't make you thirsty. So salt is no good if it doesn't come out of the container and get into contact with that which it is trying to impact. Okay, and my point here is to say that as Christians, we need to actually impact the world, and to do that, we need to be involved in the world. Okay, I think sometimes we would like to just stay in our little, like, Christian club. Like, all my friends are Christians. I only want to work with Christians. I don't want anything to do with anyone who's not a Christian. Well, I don't know how you're going to actually do what you're supposed to do if you're the salt of the world. Then you're just a salt. You're just salt that's staying in the shaker, doing no good for anything. Jesus says that you're supposed to be in the world. Okay, in John 17, Jesus is praying. He says that he knows that we are to be in the world. But he does follow that up with a warning, praying that we wouldn't be of the world, that we wouldn't be so part of the world that instead of us impacting the world impacts us. Okay, and that has to do with the second part of this verse that says, you know, if salt has lost its saltiness, how can it ever become salty again? Okay, do you know that pure salt, like sodium chloride, actual pure salt, it can't lose its saltiness? It's salty. There's nothing that'll make it not salty. But for salt to not be salty, it's because it was so contaminated, so full of things that weren't salt. You know, back then it was so full of the dirt that it was collected in. You know, some of the not so honest salt sellers, they would intentionally keep dirt in there because then it weighed more so they could make more money. Okay, and that salt wasn't very salty. It was no good for anything. It had lost its saltiness. Okay, and here we're warned that the same can be true of us. We can become good for nothing because we're so contaminated, right? We allow so much of the world, so much of sin, so much of worldly thinking and desires and pursuits in our life that we're really no longer useful, right? We're no longer salty. We're so contaminated with everything around us that we've lost what was supposed to make us distinct and different, helpful and useful. Okay, so imagine a seasoning. You go and you buy a seasoning and you go to put it on your food and it has no flavor. That's useless. That was a waste of your money. It's no good for anything. Okay, Jesus says that's only good to be thrown out on the path and walked on. And so is true of many Christians. We're so contaminated. We're so part of the world, entangled in the world's way of thinking, the world's way of living, that we're not actually different, and because of that, we are useless. Okay, I'd like to be the salt of the world. I don't want to be useless, so I want to keep those contaminations out of my life, keep those impurities out of my life. Okay, one last thing on salt. One last thought on salt. I think a lot of modern Christians, a lot of modern pastors would like to believe that this verse says that you're the sugar of the world. Okay? You're the sugar of the world. Just say everything that's sweet and nice that everyone's always going to like. Right? That everyone's always going to want more of. We want to be desirable. We don't want to be disagreeable. We want everyone to like us. And so we offer spiritual sugar that tastes good, but isn't actually good for anything because there's no truth in it. There's no truth that is actually contained in that. So this is like empty spiritual calories. Empty spiritual calories. Okay, we're not helping people grow in Christ. We're not helping them mature and be strong and healthy. We're giving them like spiritual diabetes. And that's how a lot of us, that's how a lot of us act. Okay, because we don't want to offend, we don't want to say anything harsh. We'd rather be sugar. But we're not to seek to just please everyone. We're to be salt. Okay, and if you're bland salt or if you're sugar, you're no good for anything. Okay, all of that for just one verse. All of that to talk about salt. Now we got to talk about light. That was just one illustration. Jesus also said that we are to be the light of the world. I promise we'll be much faster with this one. I guess I must like salt more than I like light. Verse 14 says, "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." So I said that when Jesus says that we're to be the salt of the world, he kind of is saying that the world is rotting and decaying, and it needs salt. So here, him saying that we are to be the light of the world is acknowledging that the world is dark. The world is a dark place, and it needs light. Needs light. If you don't believe me, then I think your eyes are closed. I mean, you just look around. The world's dark. Just is. Okay? There's a lot of evil. There's a lot of sin. It's a dark place. Jesus says we should live as those who give light to the darkness. Give light to the darkness. Isaiah 60 verse 2 says, "For behold, darkness covers the whole earth, and thick darkness covers the people." It's like, you know, the world is dark, and then the people are even darker. Ephesians 5, 8 says, "You were formerly darkness, but now you are the light in the Lord. So walk as children of light." She says, yeah, you used to be part of the darkness. Before you knew Jesus, before you actually put your faith in him, you are darkness. You might not realize it, but you're still in darkness. He says, but once you've actually put your faith in me, now you should be the light of the world. Now you should be the light of the world. So in the Bible, darkness is many times used to illustrate sin, right? Evil. But also, and maybe even more so than that, it's indicating spiritual blindness, a lack of knowledge, a lack of understanding, or wrong understanding about God. Okay, the world is ignorant. They don't know the reality of the Bible. They don't know the reality of who God is. They're blind to true spiritual truth. They're unable to see it. They're unable to comprehend it. And here we're told that we are to be like lights, illuminating that truth, showing what is right and true. We are to be lights that are showing the way. Okay, you can hide all kinds of ugliness in the dark, right? Okay, So if your house is messy and you're going to have people over, you don't feel like cleaning, just keep all the lights off. You can hide all kinds of ugliness in the dark. But Christians don't do that. They don't allow the ugliness of sin, evil, darkness to be hidden. But instead they shine their light on it and expose it. There's a well-known pastor, D.L. Moody. You may have heard of him. And he says, you know, this world is a terribly, terribly dark place. And he says, and what a poor world, because it receives such a faint and weak light from most Christians. And so the world is left stumbling around in ignorant, total darkness. Okay, Jesus says that if we want to be an effective light, we need to actually be seen. We need to actually be seen. Right? That's why he says the light should be put on a lampstand, not hidden under a basket. Okay, if you have a lamp that you're using to give light and you choose to hide it underneath a bucket, that's stupid. That's just what he's saying here. That doesn't make any sense. Okay, you don't turn a light on and then hide it underneath something. It's pointless. It's just a waste of electricity. And yet a lot of us as Christians are kind of content to be secret Christians. We don't want people to see. We don't want people to know. We don't want people to understand that we actually are children of light, that we're actually a Christian. So we hide because of fear of criticism, sometimes because of laziness, all kinds of reasons we hide the fact that we are actually a Christian. Because we're ashamed. We want to be liked. We want to be appreciated. We don't want to offend anyone. Have you ever been in darkness and then someone turns the light on and it's really annoying, right? It's irritating. You're in total darkness and they come and they shine a light in your face. You're in bed, you got a headache. Then your wife walks in and turns the light on. It's not a pleasant experience. Okay, but Christians, we sometimes, even if the world might not like it, have to turn the light on. We have to turn the light on because Jesus calls us to. And sometimes because we don't want to, you know, be that irritation, instead we hide our light underneath a bucket. We live as secret Christians. God says that isn't to be the case. Jesus never intended for there to be secret followers or undercover disciples. We're supposed to boldly serve him. We're not to be ashamed of declaring our allegiance and loyalty to him. There's this kind of scary verse in the Bible in Luke chapter 9, verse 26, where Jesus says, if you are ashamed of me and of my teaching, then I'll be ashamed of you when I come in my glory, in the glory of the Father and of the holy angels. He says, if you live ashamed of me, then I'll be ashamed of you. I don't want that to be the case. I don't want that to be the case. Jesus says that the actions we take, the way that we live, should be so unique, so different from the world, that it gives light. Real light. Not like, you guys ever have glow-in-the-dark stuff? It doesn't really help you see anything. It's kind of cool. Like, you put glow-in-the-dark stars on your ceiling, you know? It's kind of fun. But it doesn't really help you see anything. We're to be light. Real light. You guys know what lighthouses are, right? On the sea, there's lighthouses, and they're used for guiding ships and navigating ships. Put big lights on there so that people know where to go, where to stay away from. So imagine if there's a captain and they're counting on the light from a lighthouse to safely get their ship into port, and that light isn't there. That light never comes. That's how the world is. They need light and we're not showing it. You know what happens when there's a lighthouse and the light's not on? Instead of it being a helpful tool for navigation, it becomes an obstacle to avoid. Okay, a lot of times, lighthouses are put out on piers. They're put out into the sea. Imagine if the light's not on. Now it's just something that the ship has to stay away from because it's going to crash into it. So when we, as Christians, claim to be someone who has light, but our light doesn't actually shine, we're doing more harm than good. We're doing more harm than good. We're a terrible example and terrible witness of what it means to be a Christian. So Jesus says here, the world needs salt and it needs light. We are to be both of them, salt and light. But the reality is, I think a lot of us walk around like with an empty salt shaker and a flashlight with no batteries. You know, it's like kind of pretending to be salt and light, but we're really no good to anyone. It's like, well, I got a flashlight. I mean, there's no batteries and the light bulb's been burnt out for 10 years, but I got my flashlight. Well, I got a salt shaker. There's no salt in here. It can't do anything, but it kind of looks good. A lot of us are content to live that way. Jesus says, no, you need to live in such a way. Let your light so shine. Be the salt of the earth. I've said we're many times living kind of useless, you know, good for nothing. Jesus, it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be that way. Do you know that Jesus made it clear that he is the way, the truth, and the life, and that he is the light of the world? So what people actually need, what people need is Jesus. They need his preservation. They need the light and illumination and truth that he provides. That's what people need. And yet, he says that we are to be a part of that. We are to be a part of that. So Jesus says, I have work to do. I've got lives to change, but you actually need to be my hands. You need to be my feet. You need to be my mouth. You are to be my body and live in a way that points everyone to the reality of who I am. Romans 10:13 says, everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. But how can they call on him to be saved unless they believe in him? And how can they believe in him if they have never heard about him? And how will they hear about him unless someone tells them? It's crazy that God lets us be a part of this, that the God of the universe lets us actually be a part of his mission. That he's way better salt and light than we are. And if he says, no, I want to use you. I want to use you. Be the salt, be the light of the world. So we are to preserve, protect the world. We're to give it flavor and taste. We're to give light to the world. And it sounds really arrogant when you say that. It's like, well, Christians are really full of themselves. Well, it's here. So it might sound arrogant that the world needs us, but it's what the Bible says. The world needs Christians. The very ones that we saw last week are despised and rejected and persecuted by the world. Is the world's only hope. The world needs us. Because I don't know if you know this, but Jesus isn't physically here in body anymore. He has left, he's gone back to heaven, and he has given us his spirit to do his work. Will we do his work? Will we speak his words? Because if we dismiss that responsibility, if we say, you know, Jesus, I know you say we're supposed to be the salt and light, but I don't feel like it. The world is going to suffer. Okay, they just are. So the question is, are we making a difference? Are we having an impact? Here's the reality. Either you're making an impact on the world for Jesus. You are either making an impact on the world for Jesus. Or the world is having an impact on you, pulling you away from him. These are the only options. It's one or the other. Are you being salt and light? Jesus here says that we should be. He says that we should be.